the contract with Torrey Co., I believe, is that what we are?
Yes.
Similar to what we did with the general consultant searches a couple of years ago, or last year, we're asking the board to table the RFI process for a private equity consultant, given Jay's recent retirement and also the pace of investing that we've been on. We want to give it another year under the contract with Torrey Co., and then if we're able to add staff and things go according to plan, the idea would be that next year, next fall, we would do the RFI for private equity consultant. But your policy stipulates a 7-year maximum term, so we need your consent to override your own policy.
So, B, anything special we have to do next?
Yeah, take a vote.
Take a vote. So the vote is to, so, and the proposal...
Under the recommendation portion of the staff memo.
Would anybody like to discuss this?
I move staff approval or staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So, okay. Thank you. You beat the...
Did beat the clock.
Time frame. But now we'll see if you can do the next thing.
I reserve that time for the next thing. Tab 5 are proposed policy changes. Earlier in the year, we were advised OIC policy that so that we only need to bring you policy changes, not procedure changes, which can be approved by the CIO. But since this is the first kind of test of that new policy, we brought you policy changes as well as procedure changes so that you could at least see them. And that's what's included in these numerous pages. And also, Carl, come up. There were some tabled policy changes related to the deferred compensation 457 plan that you asked that we come back. That riddle's been solved with DOJ, and so those are included as well. I have a staff memo there summarizing the key changes to the regular policies. Carl's memo is embedded in there as well related to the deferred comp policy changes. So I guess I would just ask if there are any questions about any of the proposals.
I read the policy changes. I think I remember the conversations we had about the adjustments. I thought they were fine.
Is there anything in particular you want to bring to our attention?
The only thing I would highlight is the Treasury Committee that we tried to, and I sent you an email on this, to make it more explicit when things go to the Treasury Committee and when
things
go to
the charts.
Yeah, so those charts kind of summarize what's in the procedures.
Except in that language, I did notice that you didn't compel a process to the committee versus the Big Four. You just set the caps for the committees, right? Or am I misunderstanding that?
That's right. So it's a dollar threshold and differentiating between new relationships and existing relationships. Those are kind of the two decisions that flow down.
Right, but I thought one of the things that sometimes left discretion in the process was whether, let's say, for an existing relationship and a re-up below $200 million, I think the button was $150, whether that had to go to committee or could come to the Big Board. I didn't see language about compelling it to a committee or not compelling. That discretion is still there, right?
Yeah, so the only thing that is compelled is when it has to go to the OIC. So it's optionality on the committee for below those thresholds. So there could be a deal that comes to the OIC that could have gone through the committee, but not the other way around, if that makes sense.
Okay, so John, that was where we sort of had some back and forth in, I think, last year in the PE committee. And as long as you're comfortable with that ambiguity, I'm fine with it. But I do know that one of the issues and questions that I had last year hadn't been resolved in the new policy. And that's fine with me, but I just want to make sure that we're still, that we all understand there's still the ambiguity and judgment about some issues going to committee versus the big board.
Yes, I guess we want to preserve that optionality for situations that we think require extra attention, and yet for those that are much more perfunctory have a clear understanding of what the thresholds are.
Okay, so then would it be reasonable to say that in the situations where you have staff determines that in lieu of going to committee that it should go to the big board, maybe you tell us why? That might be helpful, because there were a few times I remember last year when Dave was sort of like, why is this in?
Solero would be, yeah.
Those are, this change, in my opinion, is to avoid that kind of, that issue. You shouldn't see that happen.
No, it wouldn't have solved that problem, right? Because Solero came to the big board, so your changes allow that to continue.
Allow it to happen, but it's unlikely in this scenario because of the dollar thresholds. Existing relationship, it would have gone to the committee.
But Rukai, what I'm hearing from you is that you want from staff an explanation for why a deal that doesn't reach those thresholds is still coming to you.
If it's a staff decision, right? Mm-hmm.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, very well.
Yeah. So just give me an example. I thought it was only kind of a mechanical thing. You're saying that's not correct, so give me an example of something that.
So to me, it is strictly mechanical, and the only note is if there's a particular investment opportunity that's urgent, the CIO may seek OIC approval for committee consideration of that particular investment opportunity. So that's the only exception.
So you could have $1 billion that would go to a committee because, is that what you're saying?
That's an unlikely hypothetical example, yeah. If there was some urgency to it, we could have an OIC meeting. In that instance, we certainly would call a special OIC meeting, but yeah, that's the kind of thing.
But I think part of what was going on here, number one, was to align terms so that it was clear what was going on, to make sure that respective functions were honored, but also to leave some discretion so that you didn't get caught up simply because you built automatic thresholds, that if circumstances arose where those thresholds weren't appropriate at a particular deal, you retained the discretion to say, notwithstanding those thresholds, we want to be able to bring this one to the board, and certainly to explain that. Or, on the other hand, where you have one that maybe just a little bit over that is of an emergent nature, you could deal with it other than having an emergency meeting of the council.
Well, certainly, because any board member can bring a deal to the council. I mean, if you want to do that, you just talk to the chair, and the chair could be the person to.
But we should have, Rukai's point is we should have an explanation.
Right, okay.
So in the example that was used, the explanation would be, yes, qualifies for committee, re-up existing relationship, but staff's rationale was been out of the market 7 years, so we are treating this like a new underwriting. That would be the explanation.
Or if I may, here's a good example of one. We recently did a new relationship with Helen Friedman. That's a group that I think we have long-term aspirations to grow into a sizable relationship. We were limited in our allocation to $100 million this time, so it fell well within those parameters. But again, given the long-term goal of having them become a core partner, that's one that if the timing had worked out and we had moved past them now, if we could have gotten them in front of you, we would have preferred that.
Okay. Yeah, I guess.
But the ultimate goal is to remove sort of the ad hoc nature of this goes to committee, this goes to the OIC, to have clear dollar limits with the understanding that the OIC gives every one of these the full due diligence package, and it's sort of incumbent on you to say, here's a new relationship, it's under $100 million so it can go to committee, but whichever one of you, we would like to see that brought before the full board, you kind of raise your hand.
Okay, well, that being said, any other questions about the proposal?
So I had one question on the one place to work change. little bit on that.
Which one?
It was on number three. I've got to try and figure out which page it's on now.
That was part of the plan, so it's...
Yeah, I know. It's challenging for you to flip fast enough to keep up.
What was the policy? Do you want to look at the paper?
I thought it was the third one, the third item in the summary. I don't know.
What policy number?
Yes, 4.03.02.
Okay. That's fixed income.
Policy and procedure.
So that was just, that was, okay, that was only with respect to fixed income?
Internal fixed income portfolio management, yeah.
Okay. I think I thought...
Answer your question.
Yeah, I think it does, because I think I read it too quickly and was thinking it applied to the equities too.
So you're saying in plain English, the internally managed fixed income group can buy private placements? What's the plain English version of what this... 144A is the private placement.
Correct, I'm not on the same page, but that basically says we cannot buy those for internally managed funds.
It strikes the 144A and then...
External managers may, but this just applies to internal, we are not going to buy for any of them.
Okay.
And it's just for the portfolios listed at the end of that section, which is the DCBS funds, the DAS insurance fund, ODOT, ODBA, and Oregon University.
Oh, okay.
Portfolios that Tom manages, Tom often manages, and Perrin oversees. And then we just wanted to be more explicit in terms of what we meant by mortgage-backed, asset-backed securities, and that's why we, because that's a broad category, so we wanted to be more explicit.
So it only applies to those funds?
Correct.
So, I'm sorry, was there a motion to approve these policy changes?
I move approval of the proposed OIC policy changes as outlined and reflected in the draft report.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So that's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I also just want to reflect for the record, I think John is the only serious server on the planet who uses the word optionality.
So noted. That
undermines my credentials as a surfer.
Because I can't leave the room.
John, you're right.
Okay. Asset allocation profiles, net asset values as of the end of August in Exhibit 6, no exceptions to report. Trying really hard to send Paul off into the sunset at the high water mark. Gave up a little bit there in August, Paul, but we're working hard to get back.
Good. Got 2 months.
And then agenda item number 7, forward topics, always in flux. This is what it looks like most recently. So November 5th is going to be a stout meeting. And then as you know from your email communications with Julie, we're working hard on trying to nail down the dates for 2015. So appreciate your flexibility and attention to that.
Okay. And November 5th. This is your response on November 5th.
Yeah, my effective retirement date's December 1. And I think they'll probably have my replacement on board by the November 5th meeting as well.
Somebody sitting in the chair, not to replace you.
Yeah, well, no, they don't get to sit in the chair either, but I get to sit in the chair until this will be available. You know, one piece of historical information, as I was looking back on Keith, your question about those capital commitments that we were making in 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. In 2002 and 2003, there was about $6 billion in pension obligation bonds issued.
and that money all came dumping into this fund at once. And the fund was about a $40 billion fund, so that's about a 15% increase in the capital. Wouldn't surprise me that some of what we're seeing in those vintage year concentrations in 5 and 6 is the time it took to get that money deployed out in those years. And that's somewhat unique. There's not a lot of funds that issue pension obligation bonds, so when you look at that, that is kind of a piece of history there. And you know, I think they did as good a job as they could, but you're going to end up with some of that concentration there.
That's good context.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any public comment?
Well,